Blog Talk Radio.
Something happened to me last Thursday when I was driving home. I had a couple of miles to go. I looked up and saw a glowing orange object in the sky to the east. It was moving very irregularly. Suddenly, there was intense light all around me. When I came to,
welcome to Strange Surrounding Secret Universe. I have a great two guests tonight. I want to bring them back on, Bob and Betty Luca, and we're going to discuss this part two of the Andreessen Affair. Let's bring them on without further ado.
Bob
and Betty, welcome.
Right.
Oh, hey, I had such a great time when you guys was able to join me last time.
And
you know, I hate having a 30-minute show because, you know, whenever I bring great people on like you guys, we could talk all day. Because I remember us talking afterward. We talked like an hour. I mean, there's just so much stuff we can cover. You guys are amazing. Thank you so much.
Well, we enjoy talking to you too, you know.
Oh, hey, and it's a very, you know, I'm very humbled. So since the last time we talked, guys, has there been any new developments or anything like that?
Well, there's only one slight thing. I believe the last time we talked to you, I told you I had written the United States Attorney General's office because my computer was hacked by the Navy Base Weapons Division. Okay. Well, they did send me back a letter finally, and they indicated that because it was a violation of federal law, that I would have to go through the FBI. So I have since filed a complaint with the FBI to investigate both the Army and the Navy for hacking into my computer, which is totally illegal, whether it's a military or not. So we'll see what the FBI has to say when they get through taking a look at it.
I'm sure they're not in a hurry to get back in touch with you. You know, that's how it is. They want to spy. They want to do all this crazy stuff.
Right.
But they never want to get in touch with somebody whenever they're calling them out on it.
Yeah, well, I did bring up to them. I said if the situation were reversed and I had hacked their computers, that the punishment would be swift and harsh.
And they would throw the book at you too, Bob.
Oh, yeah, I'd be behind bars right now. But when they do it, they seem to find a way around these things. I also was unaware, but I've been advised that legally we could sue them, probably for a lot of money, which is starting to appeal to me more and more. The more I get the runaround, the more appeal that's starting to have.
Hey, you know, and whenever a person's total life has been invaded, you know, there's only, it's kind of like a, you know, and I hate saying this, but it's kind of like a feeling of being, having everything took from you, you know, your dignity, your privacy, you know, it's just, it's a total infringement, and I believe that you're entitled to, when your privacy is forfeited like that, and there's no grounds for them to be doing these investigations, then you should be compensated for your troubles and all the aggravation.
You know, they actually invaded every aspect of our life, from the IRS to tapping our telephone to following us to having the helicopters to making unusual phone calls to us and hacking my computer. And, you know, I caught them this once hacking the computer. I don't know if they had done it before or since. I know my computer has been hit so hard a couple of times already this year that I had to reformat the hard drive and put all my information back on. And they've got to be pretty good because I use a good version of McAfee, Total Protection, and somebody's gotten by that a couple of times. So whoever's doing it is apparently pretty good at what they're doing.
Well, see, here's the thing, Bob, is they're getting their arresting these hackers and, you know, these people from Anonymous and all these other, and they're making deals with them. Hey, come on our side, help us out, and we won't take you to jail. You know, that's basically
what's going on. It won't do them any good because there's nothing on my computer now that is of any use to them. So they can do it all they want. They're not going to. Nothing's going to show up that they're interested in.
It's just them tabs. You know, it's just unnecessary. And listen, and then I've said this to a couple people and a lot of my colleagues about you both. You both. You know, I've been able to talk to you, you know, off the cuff and on the cuff, and I can actually say that you guys are two patriotic, God-loving Americans that don't bother nobody. That just wants
to
get your story out.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we Betty and I think I mentioned this before, we were the first ones to talk to Larry Warren, who was one of the airmen at Bentwaters Air Force Base. Mm-hmm. And he came to us first, and we didn't have enough connections to get the story out. So we referred him to Citizens Against UFO Secrecy, and that's how that story all came out on the Rendlesham Forest. And the thing is, I have been interested in, I have had people, Marines write me that have claimed that they'd seen in Vietnam UFOs rising out of the jungle. I've had sailors tell me they've had sightings aboard the USS Roosevelt. And I have filed on the Navy and, you know, the respective services. And it's amazing how much information they seem to lose when you're looking for that information. You know, the ship's logs were lost for that particular day or whatever. And that's just baloney. They don't lose things like that.
Yeah, really. How are you going to lose? That's like, you know, air traffic control. Whenever there's something happens with a plane or there, I mean, how can you not know what's going on? Because there's had to be a point up to where there was communication being made and just all this other logistics and legalities. It's just really baloney. And you just said it right. I've got another word for it, but I don't think
you'll believe
it. I'm sure. I know.
Do you know? Hey, I say, of course, you know, hey, whenever, you know, whenever I'm around great people, you know, there's, you know, and that's a great thing about my show, is we can cover so much ground, and there's not going to be one vulgarity used, and because our words are so much powerful than to talk ugly.
Right.
My grandma told me that.
Okay.
You must be a God-loving grandma.
Hi, I am. I love my grandmas. May them both rest in peace. They were beautiful people, and you know, that's a part of life, is that we gain so much, but then we also lose. So, Betty, what's been going on with you, dear?
Well, not much, but I've been thinking about how Bob and I met and everything, and why we've had such similar things, or dates, I should say, for 1944, for us to both have childhood encounters, and then in 1967 to have an adult encounter. So, you know, I know that things have all been arranged for us to get together. There's no question in my mind at all of this. But it is a strange thing how the UFO phenomena works, you know. We have God watching over us, so that's what counts.
Well, the other thing, too, is everybody, I mean, you know how many people have been abducted worldwide. Everybody has a little piece of this puzzle.
Right.
You know, where our story is just one little spoke in the wheel.
That's
and
right.
Eventually the whole thing has to come together, and people are really going to have to pull together to get this out, because the government is not going to just come out and release the information. And I just saw on the computer, I believe it was yesterday, an article saying that people interested in the UFO phenomena look at Hillary Clinton as a possible way to get the UFO information out. And this is totally foolish. When Bill
Malarkey. Clinton... Malarkey. Hey, well, Hillary Clinton, you know, whenever somebody, oh, I hate to interrupt you, I want to tell you, somebody was, you know, I'm here in Chicago, and they were wanting to get Rahm back in. And, you know, the guy, this chief police came over, and our lieutenant or someone was knocking on all the doors. And whenever he said, well, let's get Rahm in there. Let's get Obama so we can get, you know, let's get, you know, so we can get Hillary. And when he said that, I was just like, thank you, sir, but I got to go.
Well, you know, well, I think what a lot of people don't realize, most of this information, the vast majority of it, is controlled by the military-industrial complex. Mm-hmm. When President Bill Clinton, when he was president, he tried to get the information on UFOs, and they wouldn't even tell him what happened at Roswell. They stonewalled him, and he admitted it. And it, God forbid, but if Hillary got elected, the same thing's going to happen.
Oh,
She will be able to get nothing out. In fact,
we will never get no answers. And the only way we do, and what you said before, is people like you guys and other experiencers out there, and we can piece the puzzle together by similar experiences, people that's had the similar abductions, the similar cases, and that's how we can build that investigative research and everything, is go from other people's stories, because whenever we're waiting for the government to give us answers, we better be waiting a long time, because, you know, as much as I want disclosure movement to happen, there is just so many people against it. And, you know, I do think that it is the perfect time right now, you know, for the awakening in this country and in the world for that matter. Go ahead, Bob.
I just was just going to say, the only thing the government is good at giving out at this point is higher taxes. Anything other than they're not too good at.
Now, we was able to we discussed a lot of Betty's
experiences,
experiences. Now, and I loved how, you know, it was so informative of, well, you know, and of how we talked about it. Now, was there anything that we might have left off last time?
I don't think I ever went into detail about how we actually met. Do you? I don't think I did.
I would love to have that. I'd love to hear that story. I really would.
Well, it's very strange because, you know, I was, as a young fellow, I was a hardworking guy. I was kind of a gearhead, built race cars, raced on the street because there were no racetracks.
Oh,
gears.
Yeah, I love that.
And
great stuff, man, great stuff.
I was a hardworking guy, and before I met Betty, I was working for a car dealership. I was a service manager. I was single, had a great pay. I had a new car every 3 months, a new demo, all kinds of company benefits. And a friend of mine came to me and said, you know, Bob, I've been thinking of looking for some work out of state. He says, would you feel like taking a little trip with me? I said, yeah, why not? You know, I had vacation time coming. But he wanted to take a month and go all around the country. So I went to my boss, and I said, Bob, his name was Bob, too. I said, Bob, I'd like to take a month off. Well, the answer immediately was no, I can't do that, not a month. So I went home, I thought about it over the weekend, and this is highly unusual for me. I went back in Monday, I said, Bob, I said, you can give me the time off, you can fire me, or I can quit, but I'm going. I was like compelled to take this trip.
And you never had, and so let's just, before you go any further, you didn't know why something was drawing you to where you was wanting to go. There was just something, I like to call it synchronicity.
Right.
Just something go ahead.
It was just driving. I had to take this trip. So we had we were living in Connecticut at the time. And we went down through Texas and out to California and Washington State, and we're headed back to Connecticut across the northern tier of the country. And we stopped at a rest area, and for some reason, just spur of the moment, we decided we're going to Florida. Now, this is, I don't know, 5,000 miles out of our way, round trip from where we were going. And
gave you a feeling that Bob, that you had to go to Florida, correct?
Right, right. So we just went. No argument, no hassle. We went to Florida. And we got there, and my friend Eddie had a sister-in-law that lived there. So we pulled our camp trailer onto her property. We stayed there for a couple of days, and one evening she mentioned that she knew someone that had a UFO experience. Now, I had that my experience in 1967, and I told no one other than my parents and my best friend, because
yeah.
I didn't want to end up being put in an asylum or whatever at the time.
You keep it very close to you. You don't think because just something that, you know, it's just not something that you go just tell anybody. You know, I understand
absolutely. You were correct. So when she told me that, I said, gee, I'd like to talk to this woman because, you know, she here's somebody I could talk to, and she's not going to be ridiculing me or anything like that. She's had her own experience.
Yeah, that's right.
So she told me where Betty was working because she had worked with her. I went down to the restaurant that Betty was working at, and I introduced myself. She wouldn't talk to me because Ray Fowler had warned her about reporters and whatnot. And
she thought she was the media.
So I said, this is not good. So finally, I convinced her that I was not with any media, that I was not going to write any stories, but that I wanted to talk to her because I had my own experience and all. And she
You had to reassure her, if you will.
Oh, many times. Believe me, many times. And finally, she agreed to have lunch with me the following day. So we went out and had lunch. I bought her lunch, and of course I've been buying that lunch ever since that time. But
no.
The thing is, that's how we got together. But if somebody told me then how involved this would have got, how much hassle we would have had with the government, the IRS, the military, I don't know. I might not have bought that lunch, Lauren. I might have thought about it.
I don't know. It seems like you got. Now, this is just my opinion, but I feel like y'all have got each other, that y'all was in tune to, you was able to discuss your experiences and found a likeness there, and that's what really drawed you two together. I mean, because I do think that you guys are a power couple, both in this, in the UFO field, because not only have you both experienced, but you were able to come together, and that's the beautiful part about it.
Yeah, I was just joking about the lunch part, but
of course.
Actually, I was down in Florida, and I had the big home that we had built up in Ashburnham, Massachusetts, and my children were up there. It was at my sister's request because she says, "Why don't you come down here and look for a small house?" So I got a loan on the big house that I have had up there, and I came to Florida, and I did find a little ranch-style house, and I thought, well, I'll move the rest of my family down here, you know, because I wasn't living anymore with my husband. He was my ex-husband at that point. And I was in Florida and waiting for the papers to be signed and everything, so I thought, well, I'm going to get a job so that I'm just not hanging around, and I got a job at the clock as a waitress, and that's where I met Catherine, who was the cook, and that's how I met Bob, because the brother-in-law and Bob had taken a trip all around the country and then stopped and came back down to Florida, and as I said, he came into the restaurant, introduced himself and everything, and like he said, I didn't dare to speak with him very much because I thought he was a reporter, which Ray Fowler told me to stay away from. But,
or tied into the people that you've talked to before, Betty, right? Like, because I'm sure that you was already timid and probably iffy of who you talked to and associated with.
Right. I was a little leery of speaking to any. Now, another woman, I was fine with Catherine, who was the cook, because she was such a sweetheart and everything, and she was more or less watching out for me. I could tell that just by the way she reacted. But the thing was, now my children were up north, and in the house, my oldest daughter was watching my children for me. And she happened to call down and says, "Mommy, I can't handle all of this. This is too much for me." And she said, "Could you please come back right away?" So and instead of waiting for signing the papers and everything, and at the job I was at while I was waiting, I decided, well, I'm going to have to fly back north. And at that point, Bob knew I was going to fly back, and he says, "Well, I can take you up there because we're going to be heading back as well up to Connecticut." And so I was really grateful for that, but I was a little leery because I didn't know Bob that well, and I didn't know his friend that well, and I just, being a Christian, I was thinking, oh, what are people going to think of me, you know, to be traveling along with two men that I hardly know. And so anyways, I decided I've got to get back home because it was too much for Becky to be taking care of everything, the house and the children and everything. She had two little girls, my two granddaughters, there as well. And so then Bob and I sat in the back, and Bob and his friend Eddie were in the front as we drove along. He had a little trailer in the back that he had gone cross-country with. And when we reached Connecticut, he dropped the trailer off at his friend's house, and then he thought, well, I think we'll go up on the motorcycle. He had a motorcycle, so I said, well, okay, I know I had to get home because the kids were waiting for me. And we started off on the motorcycle, and it was kind of cool at the time. And so we got just a short way up, and because it was getting so cold, we turned back, and we got his car, and then we went up. And the children were so happy to see me there because it was kind of hard on the whole family with everything that had happened.
Yeah.
You know, not only the experiences, but going to the different places to have the regressive hypnosis done for me to remember what I could
regress,
memories. Right, regressive hypnosis, yeah. And the thing is Dr. Edelstein was the doctor well-known in that field. And the thing is he left me open with it. And when I'd go home, I'd be exhausted sometimes just from everything being pulled out of my subconscious. But when I went home, I'd be sweeping the floor or picking up the house or cleaning, and all of a sudden I'd have a flood of memories of what had happened. And it was a little bit scary. Right now I'm getting goosebumps thinking about how scary it was for me to have all the information start pouring back into my mind and remembering all the different things that had happened.
Was Bob able to help you whenever you met him?
He was wonderful. You know, he was there for me all the time. He took me back home there, and he met my children and everything, and then he went back to Connecticut, of course. And he would come up to see me on the weekends, and he just was wonderful, very supportive, because he knew what he went through and how he felt, and now here was somebody else he could talk with about it and get it off his chest and off his mind. And I felt better, too, because then I could let him know what I was going through with everything. But continued for quite some time going for the sessions for regressive hypnosis, and you know, the entire account came out, and that's where the Andreessen affair came about. Ray Fowler asked me if he would mind if I would mind if he could write a book about it, and I was a little leery at first because it's exposing all of my life. But the thing
is, you're putting everything out there. You know, you're putting everything, you're putting your life and your experiences,
and that's part. Right. That
relieves
me to get a lot of that information out. Not so much for the book, but the thing was, it just lifted
personally, being able to get your story, or having some, or finding somebody that has a likeness or a likeness situation.
I'll tell you though, it was hard for me because it was such an unusual thing to have happened in 1967, you know, where the beings came into my home, and trying to explain all the different things I was put through and where I was taken and what I saw, it was so hard for me to explain. So I started to draw the pictures where, you know, that gives the reader, when they see the Andreasen Fair, the pictures in there, a little bit more understanding of what I was seeing as well, you know, so that they could, you know, help to understand what I went through.
The thing that she didn't mention, Lauren, is that if anybody wants to go to our Facebook page, Robert Luca or Betty Andreasen Luca, she has drawn a whole bunch of pictures depicting in color actually what she saw at different times, what she experienced. Also, you will find the whole craft and the interior workings that she witnessed, which are all line drawn, everything from the propulsion system to the outside of the craft itself. And
I've seen that, and it's got down to the detail. There wouldn't be nobody that would know that unless they were there to witness it firsthand, you know. And that's just, you know, whenever I look at the Andreasen portraits and the different paintings and stuff like that, it just blows my mind. It really does.
Sure. And she had a great eye and was very detailed in drawing and remembering and drawing everything that she saw. And those are on both of our Facebooks, hers and mine. And one other thing I'd like to mention on mine, if anyone, any of your listeners has had any type of experience while in the military, I'd love for them to just drop me a line on my Facebook, because that's something I can follow up and do some research on.
Yeah, we've had other people get in touch with him from the military and everything, but it seems as if something always gets in the way so that he's not able to follow through certain things.
But now you got to think of it like it's too bad. People from the military could be trying to just see, trying to be fish and see information they can get, you know, and mm-hmm. I believe that there's, you know, there's people like Phil Schneider and stuff like that that has exposed, you know, these deep underground military bases, which I think does, you know, a lot of the stuff really happens. But, you know, in this, you know, in the Andreasen Fair, I think that something happened and, you know, the government wanted to really know what you guys knew, and they seen you guys get together, and then that's when they were like, oh, I think they got scared.
Yeah, could be.
Well, we were supposed to be the ones to get scared, but it didn't really work out. I don't know if on the last show, I think I talked about the helicopters that were over our house.
Yeah, the black helicopters. Yeah. Right. Well, you were talking about going on these trips. On these different camping trips and all these other places, and they would follow you way before you would even get to A to B to all this other stuff.
They'd be in New Hampshire and Florida, Connecticut, but see, I have
places
a sense
that
of humor.
You wouldn't, nobody would know that you were going. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
Oh yeah, yeah. There's no way anybody could know where, because we'd take off sometimes. Well, on one occasion, we took off 3 o'clock in the morning, hooked up the camp trailer, and took off, and that was on a Saturday evening. And Tuesday or Wednesday, two FBI agents showed up at my job wanting to know where we were. So, and that's all documented, and my coworkers and supervisor have documented that in magazine articles and so forth. But I got one.
I think it's safe to say too close for comfort, right, guys?
Yeah. You might appreciate this. I had a friend in the military, and he built me an exact replica of a surface-to-air missile.
Oh,
well,
wow.
A couple of times a week, at least, anywhere from 2 to 6 times a week, these helicopters would come over. And low enough, Lauren, where with a baseball, I could have thrown and hit them. I mean, I'm talking 75 feet and up. Okay. Well, one afternoon, we heard the familiar noise of the Huey rotor blades, and the thing was approaching our house from the north. Well, I had flown over the house myself because I was taking my lessons on for my pilot's license, so I knew what he could see at that altitude.
Oh, yeah.
We went out back, and we set the surface-to-air missile up on a cement pad that was out in the backyard. Well, that helicopter cleared the roof, and all of a sudden, Lauren, that thing turned sideways. I thought he was going to break the rotor blades off, and he went into an evasive maneuver and headed back where he come from. I laughed. I told Betty, I says, you know, I said, I bet you that guy going back, get himself a shower and change his clothes.
And, he just smashed himself.
Well, I wouldn't doubt it. You know, I have nothing against the guys that were flying those things. They're just doing what they're told.
Of course.
The pilot,
everybody's got a boss, Bob. Everybody's got somebody to answer to, you know.
Right. And another thing, I mentioned to you that growing up, I built race cars and I raced on the street and all. Well, that came in handy, too, because we were followed many times by cars that when we got the license plates, I gave them to Police Lieutenant Larry Fawcett, who was also a UFO investigator. And he'd run the plates, and they'd come back as unissued. So that tells you FBI, CIA, some government agency. But the thing is,
an unmarked vehicle. An unmarked vehicle of some instance that it's watching your every move. And, you know, the thing about it is, too, I had a similar experience. I was following the Grateful Dead around in 2004, doing things, leaving the wildlife. That's whenever. I was in Las Vegas, and can you believe that whenever I was doing that tour, I had these helicopters following me around. And a lot of people could say, hey, you're paranoid, you're whatever, but they was following me around. And it brings a point. I think I made this point when we talked. Just because we're paranoid, that don't mean they're not after us.
Oh, absolutely. You have to keep your eyes open because you don't know if these people are going to do you harm. And I'll give you two examples that I don't think we mentioned before. Betty and I were doing a lecture in Phoenix, Arizona. And during a break, a man walked over to me that was obviously military. I mean, he had crew cut hair, shirt buttons straight down, even with his belt buckle and all, you know. And he told me, he says, the only reason we're sending the helicopters is so we don't have to hurt you. In other words, they were to intimidate us. Now, that was the first time. Then the next time, Betty and I were lecturing at MIT in Massachusetts. And Dr. J. Allen Hynek, who, was the spokesman for the Air Force at the time.
Oh, yeah, great
project,
man.
Right. Yeah. Rushed over to Betty, no conversation or anything. He said, stick to philosophy and leave the military out of it. He was giving her a message for me because
he's pretty much telling you, hey, it's safe to say, shut up, right?
that's what they kept saying. But, you know, I bothered the Pentagon, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. The CIA wouldn't give us I called the CIA, said, we're doing a book. I want an interview. They wouldn't give me an interview. The administrator of NASA, listen to this, actually ran out of his office when we came down to do an interview with him. We were told he was there. We were told he'd give us an interview. When they found out what book we were doing, we got to his office, and we were met by a secretary out front that was obviously a little nervous, and she said he was not in his office. Now, this happened in the time it took us to walk from the guard station to his office, which was less than 5 minutes. That when a government backs down from people like us, who are, I mean, we're really nobody, just working people, there's a reason. The FBI made comments about, Betty and I did a news show about three, four segments on evening news, and they made comments that they were doubting more or less what we were saying. So I challenged the FBI to do a TV show with us, not about Betty and I, but about FBI documents that I had in my possession at that time. Do you think they showed up? No.
Hell no.
Nope. I think that's why they didn't know what to do with us, really.
Yeah. I think they're afraid. I think that where you guys had experiences and synchronicity brought you guys together, especially when you told me that, you know, and then when you guys did meet, you were able to get your two stories, you know, your two stories found a similarity there. And you was like, well, hey, you know what I'm saying? If we experience this together, why don't we just bring it together? You know what I mean? And and it seems like since then, you've been railroaded. And people has tried to make it hard for your lives for being together. It's like, you know, they talk about power couples in Hollywood. Well, I think you guys are a power couple in the UFO community. And you know, when they feel like they're afraid, they want to shut you down.
I think
they first do intimidation, you know what I'm saying, and then they want to try to break things up or separate you, you know, or turn your family against you or siblings or children.
God is with us. So, I mean, that is the main thing, knowing that the Lord is with us and watching over us. I have no fear, and I'm sure Bob feels the same way.
Well, that and there's the fact that the people that we've been in contact with, the aliens that we've been in contact with, have technology that's far superior to our government.
Oh,
they may be watching
yeah.
over us, too. You know, that's
right.
always a possibility. So you never know, because when we were in, we were doing a lecture in Louisiana.
We were all over the place.
Anyways, it's on the south on the coast, and I was there by a woman CIA agent, if I would be willing just to let them know what was going on with people in the UFO community, you know, that we were in contact with.
They was wanting you to give him the goods of what we talk about at conventions and stuff like, well, you know, like behind the closed doors, you know, that's, oh, man.
I said, I don't think so. I wouldn't go that way. No way.
Well, see, you know, it's just like, you know, they talk about people discrediting themselves. When somebody would go to that length and right there, that's pretty much just basically saying that, you know, it's giving in. You know, it's they know something that you know. And they don't want you to say anything to you. They want to know what's, you know, and that's why. And listen, I've got some great people in MUFON. I've got some great people. You know, I'm scared of MUFON. You know why? Because everybody that's in there is either police, ex-military and stuff like that. And it makes you think. I mean, you know, and I love the people that's in MUFON. Don't get me wrong. I mean, a lot of my close calls and everything is involved. You know, Chase, Cleffy, and that's
But you don't know if you don't know if those particular people are working both ends, or if there's a mole in there from the government. So that's where I can understand that fully, Lauren.
That's why I've always went rogue. I mean, I hate using that word, but I've never belonged to any UFO organization. I never belonged to a ghost team. I believed in finding my own answers and getting the people that I know that has great information to share it, and to trust in their word. No, not trust into an organization's word, or just because I just think there's just a lot of stuff that we don't know about that's involved in that.
But you know, MUFON has done a lot in order to bring that information out. I understand how you feel because a lot of military and police and so forth are involved in that organization. But they are trying to get that information out as well, you know. And I know we have already been asked
But
we've already been asked to go out to California, to Nevada, to Florida, and up in Massachusetts again. It makes it difficult for us because, you know, we don't like to travel by plane. I don't mind train or car, but the distances are so far, and that's what's hard. And we also have a large white dog. Of course, you know, someone's going to have to take care of him, too.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
and let me tell you this, too, guys. You don't know who's going to be sitting in y'all's presentation and just not trying to get information, but fishing. And there could be a lot of, you say, for instance, you guys would be talking at a MUFON meeting or just some kind of UFO meeting of some sort, and there could be people involved in the CIA or, you know, acting like
right.
UFO buffs, but sitting,
oh, sure.
You know, fishing.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
trying to
sure.
Get you,
I think
you know,
right.
And that's what the scary
right.
part.
That's going to happen in our life all along anyway because
all the time.
And we're still having things happening to us. So, I mean, we're going to have those type people that are just going to be always watching what's going on. You know, the book that Bob and I have, we're getting it close to done.
I wanted to mention that too tonight. I wanted to touch on that because we remember when we were talking on the phone there off the cuff, y'all was talking about that new book, and I've been
right.
really
it's
excited
called,
about that. And
right, there's someone that's going to be trying to see if it can be printed and everything. But it's called Lifting the Veil. When it's ready and out there, it will be called Lifting the Veil. And I was given something about the One. A lot of people have wondered, who is the One that I keep on having an experience with, which is all bright white light? I've never seen any face there at all or a body of a person. But it's always bright light that is before me, and I hear the voice, but that's it. And I've had maybe about 4 to 5 different experiences with the One. And while I was doing the book, I stopped briefly, and I started to draw because I was trying to understand the words that were said to me. I've chosen Oh, the world, I feel a responsibility there, a big responsibility that there's something that I'm supposed to do for the world. And so this is a little bit hard on me as far as that's concerned. And the recent experience I've had, we will put in the Lifting the Veil. But as I was saying, I stopped writing the book, and I started to do a picture, and I drew a picture of the face of the One, even though there was no face that I could see. And I'm understanding who he is and what it's all about. So I drew one picture, and it's showing the whole thing of what the One is. And he also, during my last experience, it was more or less something that was given to me personally. Evidently, I am going to be used in some way in the near future to help others.
Dude, that's so important. And listen, I think we really don't have much time left, but I wanted to thank you both. I might call you back and talk off the cuff because I really enjoy, like, you know, because we got so much stuff to talk about. I wish I had a longer show. I'm just glad that I can bring you guys on here, and I'm glad that you guys both met, and, you know, the synchronicity brought you both together to be able to share your experience.
Thank you.
You know, you can give us a call or email anytime, Lauren. Doesn't have to be for a show or whatever. You can give us a holler.
Oh,
anytime.
I know that. Well, I was wanting to BS a little bit afterward because I'm really into this conversation. And even though our audience might not get to hear it, I just enjoy talking to you guys. And, you know, I believe in you. I believe in you both. And, you know, that's so important.
So
when you believe in somebody, you just... You know, and then there's a lot of stuff on the web that just tries to talk against that tries to talk against you guys. And let me tell you something. I've been behind you guys 100% ever since I've met you, and I will remain by your side.
Thank you so much.
100%. We appreciate that, Lauren. We appreciate
it. And I just appreciate everything y'all have done, and being able just to come forward and tell how the government's done you wrong, and if you guys wasn't doing nothing wrong or doing something right, they wouldn't be messing with you like they are.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I'm afraid the whole world is, especially that our country has got some really hard problems to get over. And it does deal with our government.
Well,
and
actually, a lot of it is the military-industrial complex, too, because, as I mentioned before, there's stuff the president can't get at because